Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. Coming up on 11 months of the Out of the Trenches podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate, review, and share on iTunes, Stitcher, and any of the sites where you download the podcast. It'll bring more listeners in. And also please share and promote on social media. Thank you.
My next guest is Chad Dumas. He is an educational consultant with Next Learning Solutions, an international presenter and award-winning researcher whose primary focus is collaborating to develop capacity for continuous improvement. Having been a successful teacher, principal, and central office administrator, and also professional developer and consultant in a variety of school districts, he brings his passion, expertise, and skills to writing and speaking as he engages participants in meaningful and practical learning. Get his book, Let's Put the C in PLC, A Practical Guide for School Leaders, that was published at the end of October 2020. He also lives in Iowa, and he is the founder of Next Learning Solution. So welcome to the podcast, Chad.
Thank you so very much for having me. It's really an honor to be on here and share some stories and insights and experiences with your listeners. Thank you so very much.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yeah, so I'm sure like many of your listeners, you can think of lots of times that we were, you know, in the trenches and, you know, stuck and not sure where to turn or where to go or how to move forward, but you know, with the help of others and drawing on our own past experiences, we were able to work our way through those difficulties and climb out of those trenches. So one of the stories that comes to my mind is when I was a high school principal and thinking about how, you know, when you're particularly at the secondary level, there's lots of policies and procedures and rules and regulations and laws around graduation requirements, right? I mean, that's, you know, a huge drive is getting kids to that magic number of, you know, 220 or 22 or whatever your credit system is to be able to graduate after 4 years of being in high school. And the system is set up like this, like an industrial system, right? Where it's, you know, kids come in, they go and they take freshman math, freshman science, freshman English. And then as a sophomores, they take these classes and do, right? So there's like this sequence and you got to take these classes in this order and kids come out the other end with this diploma. And so you've got these structures and processes in place to make it happen. Kids come from 8 to 3:30 every day. If they don't come every day, then there's consequences. You've got law enforcement. There's all these, right, all these parts of this system to make, to get kids in and out. And unfortunately for some kids, that doesn't work. And so many times our systems are butting heads up against families and kids that it's not working. And you know, during this time of COVID, we're seeing even more of that. And so that for me was really difficult. Seeing in my case, there were a handful of kiddos who were just really struggling. And I was struggling because I care about them. I frankly, I love them. And I wanted to make sure that they were successful. And when the system is working against them and every aspect of the system is working against them, I found myself struggling with, well, how do I help them? Because, you know, we still need to follow the rules and procedures and regulations. And so fortunately, in collaboration with some of the amazing colleagues at that school, we were able to work together. And through many hours of hitting our heads against the wall and creative programming and working with the kids and in some cases families trying to help them succeed. And I'm thinking of three or four kids in particular, but two I'll share a story about. One was a single mother who was getting close to graduation. I believe it was her junior or senior year. And single mother, did not have much family support. So she was also having to work 40 hours a week to be able to make ends meet, to put food on the table and have a home. And we worked with her as a school collaboratively to help her figure out, you know, 8 to 3:30 didn't work with a small child, not just a small child, an infant, right? I mean, the child was born during the school year. And so helping her to be able to come into school late. Some days she wouldn't come to school. She would have an alternative plan at home and be working from a computer or taking some distance classes, you know, at that time when we had distance classes. And that was kind of a rarity, not so much anymore, you know, having her come in for a little bit in the morning and then, you know, leave to go home and feed her infant and then come back for a little bit in the afternoon and then go to work in the evening and do some of her work on the evenings and weekends, to be able to get her to graduate, which we did and really excited. And she was just thrilled to be able to graduate. And then the other student I'm thinking of was a young man who also just didn't fit these constraints. Not the constraints of the work of the school day, you know, like the work day type constraints, but he didn't fit the environment of the classroom. Maybe he wasn't, I don't know if it was that he just, you know, his peers, he didn't, you know, click with his peers or what it was exactly, but it just didn't fit for him. And again, working collaboratively with the counselor and some of the teachers to figure out a way to help him be able to graduate and not only graduate, but go on to, actually the young lady I talked about went on, got her CNA degree. I don't know if she went to get her LPN or not after that, but I know she got her CNA degree. The young man, still in contact with to this day, who went and did some work. I don't know if he got his degree or at least a certificate in some career fields and started his own business. He's a very successful businessman now with wife and family, and just this really great opportunity that for him. And I don't know if those would have happened without the collaboration of a number of folks working together to out of the muck, you know, out of the trenches, really down and struggling, because we didn't know what to do. We were looking at each other, go, how are we going to do this? Well, let's work together and figure out a plan to make it successful for these kids.
Yeah, and I think those are the stories that really stick with you years later, right? Especially if you know what happened to that student and you see their success as an adult. But you know, you have that time, like you said, you were in the trenches, you were in the muck, and it takes the collaboration of finding out how you best can support that kid. And I think as we enter the 21-22 school year post-pandemic, there's going to be a lot of kids who, you know, whether it's going to be for, you know, lack of credits to graduate from high school or just family situations with their work and the economy, we're going to need to work a lot more with students to help them succeed, to help them to be able to graduate. So I think that's a great example of something that stands out to you as a trench story. Let's talk a little bit about your roles moving through the educational system into where you are now in your consultancy and writing of your book.
Yeah. So I started as a vocal music teacher, a middle school vocal music teacher in Lincoln Public Schools. And I could have shared this story as well as part of out of the trenches idea too, that, you know, I was the fourth music teacher in 4 years, maybe it was three.
Wow.
But, at a middle school where there were about 800 or 900 kids, mm-hmm. and the previous music teacher said, you know, there's 3 7th grade girls who like to sing and that's about it. And so, you know, talk about being in the trenches there, where, you know, building a program where, you know, when I left 5 years later, we had about 100 eighth graders who were signed up for the class every day. And then I had another 100, 150, sixth and seventh graders coming at 7 o'clock a couple of times a week to sing, you know.
Yeah.
Really built a wonderful program there. Then I went and was a professional developer at an intermediate service agency, working with districts ranging from 100 kids to 10,000 kids, and worked with the teachers and principals and all those school districts around whatever they needed, whether mm-hmm. it was curriculum development or instructional practice improvement or assessment design, walkthroughs, data analysis, you know, the gamut of stuff that happens mm-hmm. in schools to improve our practice. During that time, I then started working on my doctorate mm-hmm. and dissertation. We'll probably come back to that a little bit later. But at that time, I decided, I'd like to be kind of in a central office role, mm-hmm. working to move one district forward. Because, in an intermediate service agency, we're working with, 30 districts. So you mm-hmm. really couldn't see your impact. So then I decided in order to be a central office administrator, I really needed to walk in the shoes of a principal. I needed mm-hmm. to experience being a principal. And so I had the wonderful opportunity to be a secondary principal, grade 7 through 12 principal. And one of the highlights of that time was opening a brand new $19 million facility and seeing the transition from an old building to a new, and helping the staff. As a staff, we really worked to say, okay, I would say a building doth not a school make. A school is what happens in the building. Uh-huh. But having a new building gives us an opportunity to rethink about what are we doing every day and mm-hmm. how are we doing it. And so transitioning from that old building to the new. Then I was a central office administrator, director of learning in a mid-size, high poverty, high diversity district. In South Central Nebraska. And it was also a district that had been identified as by the state as persistently lowest achieving.
Okay.
Actually got that label right at the same time I got there. We got the label from the previous year's data. And then we worked at implementing the ideas that are found in the book that you referenced. Mm-hmm. And within about 5 years, almost 3/4 of the buildings in the district were recognized as national models for improving student learning. And then, as you mentioned, I'm in Iowa. I came to Ames, Iowa as the executive director of elementary education. And during my time there, realized that my experiences from the last 20 some years really have set me up well to share with others, mm-hmm. not only the research about what works, but what actually should happen to mm-hmm. make it work, because we've done the work. So like sharing with others, what do you need to know mm-hmm. to put the C in PLC? What do you need to know? But mm-hmm. also, what do you need to do? And so that's why I then decided to found Next Learning Solutions to write this book and an action guide and then share these ideas with others to help them become more successful in their practice.
Yeah, so you've been you run the gamut of just different roles in education, and I find that so interesting. Starting out as a vocal music teacher, it kind of brings me back to my days. I've always been a singer, and I miss choir this time of the COVID having shut down choirs, and I think back to when I was in choir back in middle school, right? And it was mostly the girls, right, that were involved. Yes. But kind of just remember that was the first experience I had with choir, and then participated in that a lot through high school, and obviously into an adult, and really enjoyed singing. But it's interesting to hear how your work as a principal then working with PLCs, as you said, that was kind of what got you the ideas for your book, how to put the C in PLC. And let's talk a little. You said you were working on your dissertation, and yep. And so in the pre-chat, you talked to me a little bit about how a lot of what you researched in your dissertation, you transferred that to book format for your book. Yeah. So walk me through that process and the time it took. And then you said that it was during the pandemic that your wife kind of got on you about, let's get that thing published.
Yes. So the ideas for the book came from my dissertation. And the dissertation came because we were traveling across the long state of Nebraska and Colorado to visit mm-hmm. my parents out in near Breckenridge, Alma, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And so it's like an 8 or 9 hour trek. And I was sharing with her how, if there's ever a silver bullet to improve our system of education, mm-hmm. it's making sure that you have a collaborative environment where teachers are working together to improve their practice and results for kids. Like mm-hmm. that works. We know it works. There's 50 years of research on it. It's very clear. Not a lot. Like there's very few things that you could say this actually works in every situation. And this is like one of those that mm-hmm. pretty much is going to work anywhere. I've yet to see it not work anyway. That's why I say pretty much. So there may be some place where it won't. But so I was sharing with her how we know that this works, but yet it's not happening in schools all over the country, even world. Mm-hmm. And my wife kept asking me, and she asked five or six times, maybe more. She said, so how do you know that principals, I was focused on principals, how do you know that principals know what they need to do? Mm-hmm. And I just kept blowing her off and saying, well, of course they know. They're principals. They've been educators. They have master's degrees. They know. It's mm-hmm. a knowing-doing gap. You know, it's kind of like, I know I need to exercise 30 minutes yeah. a day, but I don't do it, right? There's a knowing-doing gap.
Yeah.
And she just kept persistently, as a wonderful spouse does, saying, well, how do you know that they know? Mm-hmm. And finally, it occurred to me, well, maybe we don't know what mm-hmm. they need to know, or maybe they don't know. Maybe it's a knowing gap. Maybe it's not a knowing-doing gap, but a knowing gap. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started to look at the research. And, you know, like Michael Fullan talks about change, and the DeFores talk about specific PLC processes, and Todd Whitaker talks about leadership, and Learning Forward talks about profession. Like, all these different folks talk about all these different mm-hmm. aspects of what needs to happen to create a collaborative environment, but nobody had come and pulled it all together and said, look, here's what you need to know. And focused on principles as a building principle, here's what you need to know. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I pulled from all those different sources and said, okay, based on what all these folks say, there's 10 things that a principal needs to know, 10 elements of principal knowledge, which then received an outstanding dissertation finalist from PDK and was the Learning Forward's Best Research Award winner that year. You know, that was 2010, 2011, when I finished the dissertation, it received mm-hmm. those awards. And I kind of dabbled with putting it into a book format over the next few years here and there. My wife would say, you know, you need to really do this. And I would, you know, mess around with a manuscript here or there. Mm-hmm. And then finally, this last spring, as you mentioned, with COVID, she really got on me and said, you know, Chad, this is good stuff. Uh-huh. And you talk about this all the time. Nobody's going to read your dissertation. Uh-huh. It's been downloaded a couple thousand times. So somebody's reading it. But, yeah. you know, nobody, most people, maybe people are not getting to sleep at night. So that's where they download it. I don't know. But put it in a format that somebody's going to read. So that's when I you know, really went full force on it then this last spring and summer. Mm-hmm. And it's laid out just with those 10 elements. It actually, you know, laid itself out. There's 10 elements. So there's 10 chapters. And actually, I added an 11th chapter, which is a call to action. Mm-hmm. But each chapter then lays out, based on each of these elements, what does a principal need to know, a story to go along with it, some additional resources and some tools. And each chapter has that. It's very, just a very practical, you know, simple, straightforward guide that says, here's what you need to know. And then I titled it, A Practical Guide for School Leaders, mm-hmm. because it's more than just principals.
Yeah.
School leaders are, I believe everybody has the right and the responsibility to work in leadership roles. And so it really is geared towards anybody who's in a school, right? Mm-hmm. You've got learning teams, learning team leaders, deans, assistant principals, principals. Mm-hmm. You've got central office staff who support school leaders. You've got mm-hmm. aspiring leaders. You've got higher education folks who are teaching aspiring leaders. All these folks, I think, need to be thinking about, and how do we help build capacity mm-hmm. around creating a collaborative community?
Yeah, and I think this book is really needed now, and you know, more than ever. But in the pre-chat, we talked a little bit just about my experience, teaching yeah. even about 15, 16 years ago, and variety of schools that I've been in where they've taken PLC and kind of made it their own, but it's, you know, been successful in some schools and not so successful mm-hmm. in other schools. And, you know, I worked in a school where we had early release Wednesdays, and one Wednesday it was departmental, and another Wednesday it was just the subject area. So it was French out of the Department of World Languages. And then another Wednesday it was cross-curricular. And then the fourth Wednesday it was more just work on your own planning. But what I really got a lot out of was that cross-curricular PLC meeting, and being able to plan, like as a French teacher, being able to plan with the art teacher or with a social studies teacher on a lesson and see what they're doing. And many of the buildings I taught in, we didn't have that time. Maybe once or twice a year when we had, you know, PD for the building. But I think being able to work at least once a month with colleagues in different departments really helped a lot. And they worked hard to make that PLC time beneficial among staff. But then, you know, I've been in roles where, you know, they've had PLC time for the core subject areas. But right. If you don't fall into that category, or if you're a special service provider, such as a dean, or, you know, if you are a gifted talented coordinator or something, you don't necessarily partake in those groups, or you're not quote unquote needed in those groups. Right. So, talk to me about how your book can be a guide to either, really use that time effectively and also include those outlying staff members.
Yeah. So as you were talking there, it reminded me of a study that I heard Peter DeWitt talk about just a few weeks ago. Maybe it's a few months ago. I'm not sure. Time loses loses meaning during these days. You know? But he talked about that there was a study done, and that the most hated term in all of education right now is PLC from educators. Hmm. Now think about that for a second. We've got a lot of acronyms in education, a lot of competition there, but yet PLCs are what educators hate the most. And my opinion is that a big part of that is because we're not thinking of PLCs as PLCs. We're thinking of PLCs as a time of the day or a group that I'm going to meet with. And a PLC, professional learning community, it's a culture. It's a way of doing business. It's an ethos. It's who we are as a system. Mm-hmm. And the characteristics of that is that we're focused on learning. We're using our results that we get from our teaching and learning. Mm-hmm. And we're working together to improve those results for kids. That's the characteristics. And then there's lots of details. And so I think many times we get, as school leaders, get hung up on the details. So like you said, we get hung up on the, who's meeting in which group, and, they're music or art or PE, we don't need to worry about them, right? Yeah. Quote unquote, them. As opposed to thinking about if our school or our district is a PLC. We are all a professional learning community. We are a community who's coming together to work as professionals to learn what we need to learn to get better. You see how I just use those terms in different order, right?
Yeah.
A community of professionals coming together to learn. Then we can figure out those details in a meaningful way. And so one of those details that you mentioned is the organization of staff and the teaming of staff. And that's one of the elements of principal knowledge that I identified from the research, is how do you team staff? All staff need to be on teams of some sort. However, it needs to be meaningful for them. Many times I've talked to teachers, and I've seen schools where the teaming of teachers is based on convenience of the administration or the schedule. For example, third grade team. Okay, that probably makes sense that the third grade teachers are working together. We don't have any place to put the special ed teacher. Sped, why don't you go join them once a week? Music, you're free during that time. You go join them as well. So now I'm not saying that doesn't work. That could work beautifully, a music and a sped and the third grade teachers. What needs to happen, though, is that there needs to be a conversation about it in advance with these teachers to figure out, what are the needs of kids? And based on those needs of kids, what do you as a professional need to learn to meet those needs? And then as professionals, we figure out what the teaming structures work best. And then we also, so that's the first thing, is like we talk with each other to figure out what teaming organizational schemes work best. But then the second thing I think that's really important about teaming teachers is that it's not set in stone. So many times we see, a team that's just in stone for the whole year, and then that comes to a second year, and then that's a third year, and that's a fourth year, and it just keeps going on and on and on. Maybe it makes sense for the music and third grade team to meet together during the first quarter, because the music teacher has some units of study that they're doing with the third grade kiddos that match up with the third grade curriculum really well. And so those teachers want to work together during the first quarter to identify common outcomes, to identify or create common assessments, to match up instructional practices, to plan some lessons and units together. And that works really well in the first quarter. And then maybe in the second quarter, it works really well for the PE teacher to meet with those third grade teachers. Mm-hmm. Or, you know what I mean? These types of examples. Or maybe it works best that the PE music art counselor, they meet together during the first quarter to kind of solidify their processes and procedures for the year, right? So what happens is not as important as how, just like in most things in life, right? What we do is not nearly as important as how we go about doing it, right? Mm-hmm. It reminds me, this is a very simple and stupid example, but I can say the words, thank you. What I say is thank you. Mm-hmm. How I say it can be snarky. Mm-hmm. It can be genuine. It can be apologetic. It can be enthusiastic. What I say doesn't matter as much as how I say it. And so it is with PLCs. What we do, while important, is not nearly as important as how we go about doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's so important to remember, right? Because a lot of the time, you know, you have that time set aside in the week or in the month, right? And a lot of school leaders are just making sure somebody meets the goals for the unified improvement plan, but you're dumping teachers into groups without really pre-planning. So I think how you laid it out is really important for people to remember. And also talk to me a little bit about how you've seen cross-curricular teams really be able to impact student learning.
Yeah. So I've been really fortunate to see lots of amazing cross-curricular teaming work. Mm-hmm. And my mind goes to one particular school in that district. I mentioned that I was there for 9 years and was persistently lowest achieving when I first got there. And then this particular school examples, they were the first school to become national models in that school. About 90% of kids were on free and reduced lunch, about 90% are non-white Hispanic kiddos, high EL population. This school became the first school in the district to become a national model. And then the other school started to say, well, hey, if they can do it, then surely we can do it. Mm-hmm. And I think there were a number of factors, but one of the factors was this sense of team from all the teachers, where the PE was working with the first grade teachers and the music was working with the fourth grade or whatever. But some of the examples that I saw that were just really cool was the music and PE teacher worked very closely together on units. Mm-hmm. Actually, the PE teacher wrote a book on jamming and jiving, I think, or something like that, music and PE or something like that. And people can look that up. But they worked very closely with the first grade teachers to figure out what are the, for example, sight words that kids needed to know, and then who was learning them, who wasn't. And then as part of, for example, PE, they would work on their sight words. So as they were doing, for instance, jumping jacks, you know, the sight words were on the wall and big letters so they could see them. And as they did their jumping jacks, instead of counting to 10, which pretty much all first graders can do already, right? I mean, counting to 10 doesn't help them develop fluency, but saying their sight words as they jump does, right? Then, there, now, what, right? Whatever those sight words were, they could read them and say them as they were doing their jumping jacks. She did other things too, like having them crawl across the room as they were doing other different sight word sounds. And actually she did significant research around upper body strength and the ability for kids to hold themselves up, like laying down on the ground, what is it in yoga? Like a sun, not a sun salutation.
Downward dog.
I don't think it's downward dog, but you know, you lay down, if you just lay down flat on the ground and then lift your head up and hold yourself there, like that's a certain strength of muscles that require abdominal core strength. And what she found was that the kids who did not have that core strength were not reading at grade level. And so there's a strong correlation to that. And there's actually some research that's been done, I think, since that, as part of her work, maybe. So they would work on that core strength and to develop that. And so, like, it's just some really amazing examples of this cross-curricular connection that would have never happened, I don't think, if the principal just would have said, okay, PE, music, art, you guys get together because we don't know where else to put you. Mm-hmm. But instead there was a conversation with the teachers and an openness and willingness by all to learn from each other, which I think is also a part of it too, that, you know, me as a music teacher being open and willing to learn from my social studies or science colleagues and vice versa, because we do all have things we can learn from each other. But that would be one example of an amazing cross-curricular connection that had significant impact on student outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can really tell that, you know, that PE teacher really went into a lot of just planning and researching, and it's amazing what people can find out, you know, how she found out about reading scores and literacy through researching muscle and, you know, how their core strength can apply. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about kind of as we end this school year and look towards the 21-22 school year and hopefully a post-pandemic world, how the need for the C in PLC is so much more needed and what your views are on the PLC evolving in the post-pandemic world.
Yeah. So kind of as I indicated before, you know, this idea of the C, you know, C stands for community as part of professional learning community. And I think this idea that PLC is the most hated term among educators really points to the need of redefining or re-clarifying what, if you will, what a PLC is. Mm-hmm. I had the good fortune of being able to hear Rick and Becky DeFore on many occasions before they passed away. And huge fan of their work and the work of Solution Tree to make the PLC work happen. And anytime something starts to take off, people get their own twists on things. And, and unfortunately, things have been twisted in many places, not in all. There's a good number of places that are doing really amazing work where they're creating this community to do the work. And then I would hope and I would invite your listeners and anyone who reads the book or otherwise comes across this podcast to open your mind and heart to what a PLC is and to maybe reconsider what could happen when we build this collaborative environment. And not only what can happen, but what should happen, because we know that it works. Our kids depend on it. And in terms of like a post-pandemic world and where we're going from here, we've always known that there were inequities. Maybe always is a strong term. We've known for some time that there are significant equities in the world around us and in education. And COVID has really exacerbated those and put a spotlight on them. And so it behooves us in education to do everything we can to close those gaps. And I believe that every educator went into education because they wanted to impact kids. Like, not a single one of us gets up every day and says, you know, whose life can I, you know, hamper or hamstring. That's not what we're here. We're here because we love kids. We love families. And we want to make a difference in their lives. If we want to have the biggest impact in their lives, let's work together doing it.
Yeah,
that's where a PLC comes in. That's where communities who are engaging in professional learning together comes in, because that's how we go about closing those gaps. And then the other thing is about remote. You know, I don't know if remote learning will ever go away now.
Yeah.
I think there will probably always be a group of kids now and families who will want and need us to provide those services in a remote environment. And so we as a system need to think about making that happen. Well, what's the best way to do that? Is by working together. Like, I don't know everything and I can't know everything, and neither can you and neither can any other person on the face of this planet. the only way we can come close to meeting the needs of all kids is by working together.
Yeah, I think that's so well said. And, you know, whether teachers continue teaching in some type of remote environment or change, you know, roles in the next school year or change buildings, I think, you know, having that in mind, like you said, that our goal is, you know, working with families and helping students achieve, kind of going back to your trench story and how your staff made sure that those students were able to graduate is so important to remember. I wanted to ask you a little bit about what you are working on now that your book has been published, and what are your plans in the near future with your consultancy and maybe as we move more into in-person conferences?
Yeah, so I wrote the book, and actually while I was writing the book, my publishing guide said, have you thought about writing she called it a workbook. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't. And so she really encouraged me to do that. And so then I set to work on doing that. I don't call it a workbook. I call it an action guide. Okay. To put the C in PLC. It's with reflecting and doing. And so that includes questions and challenge exercises and templates to help translate the knowing to doing, right? So mm-hmm. The first book is on knowing. And now this action guide is how do you make that go to doing? And so that published in January. And then, you know, working to help get these ideas out to folks. So on my website, there's some, you know, like some packages. So like I have a collaborative leadership challenge package that involves some upfront training, a couple of days with school leaders. And again, school leaders is however the school district defines them. Mm-hmm. So it could be with, you know, quote unquote PLC leads or lead teachers or department heads or assistant principals and principals, definitely central office staff, right? 2 days up front, mm-hmm. helping to make sure that we understand what are these 10 elements of knowledge. And then over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, coaching sessions, one-on-one with the participants of the group to help them translate that which they've learned into reality and action. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, another day to come back together, reflect on our learning, identify mm-hmm. next steps for moving forward. So there's like that collaborative leadership challenge is what I call it.
Okay.
And so that that's available to schools and to districts, as well as everything I do is customized to mm-hmm. the needs of a district. So a district calls and says, hey, you know, we're needing some help. Just earlier last week was working with the school district that said, We're not sure about this collaborative time that we have allocated, if it's being used well and mm-hmm. if we should get rid of it or not. And so then we had a coaching conversation to figure out, well, where do you want to go and how do you want to get there and what would be the best ways to get there? And then I worked with them to design a training and coaching program, if you will, or a package, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, to help them get there. And so all of my work really starts with figuring out what does the school or system need first? And then we work together to help make that happen. And of course, a big part of all of that is, you know, each of us transforming our inside so that we get the results on the outside. And so there's, you know, just a variety of these types of things that are going on. I'm also really looking at writing a couple more books around, you know, really practical, hands-on day-to-day tips for school leaders to improve their own work, things that I've learned over the course of my career. And things that have become clearer and clearer to me over time about how important these are. For example, I'll just give you a couple of like sneak peek tips, you know, that I've been thinking about. Like, for instance, and I allude to this in my book, is the importance of knowing people's names and how important that is. You know, this is a really, really important skill. It's knowledge first. You got to know that you need to know their names. And then you got to actually do it, learn their names. I share a story in the book of a principal who really struggled because they could not keep the names of their staff members straight. And actually, in one of their formal evaluations, referred to a teacher by another teacher's name down the hall. I mean, this is not okay, right? I mean, yeah. let's make sure we're very clear about this. You need to know the names of your staff, and let's not mess around with that. But those, you know, a lot of these different types of things, but all of my work starts with assessing collaboratively with the school, what are your needs? And then let's craft a plan to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the best way to start out when you're working with districts, because everybody has a very varying level of need. And right now with districts kind of everything's kind of a hodgepodge, and different districts have taught in a variety of different models this year. That's really, comes down to how you can cater, what they need to what fits them best. So I've really enjoyed talking with you today about your work and what led you to publishing your book and your, tips for schools building their PLCs. Out of everything we discussed today, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Out of everything we discussed today, well, I'd like them to remember my book, but I'm guessing that's not what you're after. I think probably of all the things we talked about, the most important thing is that alone we can do so little, but together we can do so much. And so let's do it together. Let's work together. Let's build this community. Let's work together collaboratively. Let's access each other's expertise, and let's get better together.
I think that's a great quote to end with. Where can people find you online?
NextLearningSolutions.com is my website, NextLearningSolutions.com. But probably the easiest way is just to look me up on Twitter. It's at Chad Dumas. No spaces, no numbers or anything, just CHADDUMAS at Chad Dumas. And that gives you links to everything else that you might want to get to.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.